Hey guys, welcome to our podcast, The Bechdel Test, a non-feminist podcast with feminist hosts. We sit down with Princeton students and ask them the hard-hitting questions that really get those gears turning. Today we sit down with a politics fanatic to talk about nannies, dude wipes, and flirting with Hillary Clinton. This is The Bechdel Test.
Hello, welcome back to the Bechdel Test. I'm Sophia.
I'm Simon.
And I'm Emily.
And we have such a good show for you guys today. We have our second guest. We're not going to say his name yet. He's just sitting here awkwardly smiling at us.
He revealed his gender, so.
Fuck. Sorry.
You already messed something up.
Marty's. Oh, damn it. I have a fun story that I've been hyping up. It's about winter. For all those people not in Princeton, New Jersey, or not in the Northeast, it is quite cold as we speak.
Ain't that the truth?
It's like, what's the temperature? It's like 17 degrees, 20 degrees.
I'll give it a look up right now.
Colder, I bet.
The wind chill makes it mad cold. We're all like shivering in our boots.
24 right now.
I'm actually not wearing boots right now, so that doesn't really apply to me.
That's
irrelevant. Feels like 10 degrees outside.
Feels like, that's crazy.
That's Fahrenheit, guys. That's Fahrenheit.
Whoa, that's wild. Anyway, my parentals. Shout out Joanna and Richard, happen to be in Antarctica as we speak.
I thought his name was George.
That's my real dad, but you know, they're divorced, don't travel together.
Didn't mean to get into
right.
that.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. anyway, Joanna and Richard are in Antarctica right now, like looking at fucking ice and glaciers, you know?
That's awesome.
And you know, it's colder here. It's colder here
Seriously?
Than in Antarctica.
Yeah.
I was like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
Wow, that's a crazy anecdote. Thank you.
Wasn't that wild? What do you guys think about going to Antarctica, though?
You say that very choppy. Antarctica.
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 I feel like it's kind of clout-chasing behavior, to be honest. It's like
it kind of is. It's kind of like, okay, what? I can go to anywhere in the world and I choose Antarctica.
Like, the reason to go there is to go to this, like, the seventh continent.
Yeah,
continent.
Exactly.
Like, that's the reason.
I feel like I would do that to go to the seventh continent and then forget one of them anyway.
So all right, we're done.
Okay, so I'm going to introduce our guest. Thank you for that anecdote, by the way. I just want to...
Oh, for context?
Yeah, it was really interesting.
For context, the timer hit 2 minutes, and so we get to swivel
we
to leave now.
Off.
No, okay. You said his name.
Fuck.
Crap. I'll mute it out.
Thanks.
I'll bleep it out.
Okay. Oh, I have his name right here. Okay. Anyway, our guest, he wants to be president.
No way.
And I'm not talking about the president of Philadelphia Children's Hospital, not the president of the campus live-action role-play group, and not even the president of Charmin Ultrasoft. He wants to be president of the United States, and I think he will be. Luke Carroll is our guest today, and like many politicians, he is a self-described narcissist. But he should be. He's one of the smartest and most generous people I know. For example, he once gave me cookies to fatten me up like the witch in Hansel and Gretel. And so, the man who told me to introduce him, Luke Carroll.
Woo!
Go Luke Carroll!
We love Luke!
Woo!
Thank you.
So that was his voice, by the way, guys. You can't. I think that might be the only thing he says this whole podcast.
Yeah, I will say it's a very nice voice. It's like very like low
Thank you.
And like
mellifluous.
Okay, what the? That was mellifluous.
Yeah.
I expect that from Luke, not from you, Simon.
Yeah, I know. All right, so Luke Carroll has been described in his high school newspaper as being nice to a fault.
So, to break the ice, don't be concise. What's your spice and what's your vice?
Wait, what is the spice?
I'll repeat. To break the ice, don't be concise. What's your spice and what's your vice?
I don't know what a spice is, unless you mean it literally, and maybe paprika.
That's a good spice. I like that one too.
But vice, I don't know. You know, I would just say If I have like one outlet, you know, Princeton's very stressful. It's a lot of work. It's probably watching movies. I like action movies, you know.
I've never seen you watch a movie here.
Well, are you in his room at all times, Simon? Right. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
When's the most recent time you watched
a
movie?
Out of my door.
I watched a movie with my roommate. We have a projector. And we watched John Wick.
Which one? One? The
Three.
First one? The third one. How was it?
It's fantastic.
It's good?
It's lovely.
What do you like most about Keanu Reeves, the long, flowing, greasy hair?
I think he's really gritty, and that's admirable. Mm.
Come again?
I think he's really gritty, and that's
admirable. What do you mean by that?
By admirable, I mean... It's yeah, you know, he's
gritty.
He gets knocked down and he gets back up again, you know?
Don't we?
Yeah.
I would say he looks like the epitome of the word gritty, too.
That's true.
He's just like, honestly, he looks kind of gross. Like,
I think he looks.
He does.
I think he looks grunge, is what you're looking for.
Gross.
So, how do you really feel about him?
Yeah.
Keanu Reeves?
He's a great actor, and it's, you know, the role doesn't take much dialogue, and when there is dialogue, I don't know how keen I am on his acting skills. Mm. Nonetheless,
I
find myself very entertained.
Do you condone the violence in John Wick?
Not if it were occurring in real life. Oh, put that away.
Listener, Simon just flashed a beautiful picture of Luke at Luke, and it clearly made him very comfortable. Continue.
Look, I'm sorry. We're kind of getting away from the real question, which is, what's your vice? And so you're saying your vice is watching action movies?
Yeah, I think, you know, when our culture is trying to find some sort of fallibility in a person, it has to be.
There you go.
It has to be a drug, or it has to be sex, or it has to be some sort of deep, dark.
I think it does
addiction.
Have to be
deep, dark.
And
I would say that it does have to be.
And fortunately, I. Thus far, I'm not a victim of any of those things.
Do you think you dabble?
No.
Would you consider your addiction to action movies deep and dark?
I wouldn't call it an addiction because it's not debilitating and I could stop at any time.
But I feel like if you're
that's
calling
what all addicts say.
Yeah.
I can stop at any time.
And I think if you're calling Keanu Reeves gritty, you kind of have an addiction.
Mm. Well, I mean, you know, I think that's what all the reviews were describing him as.
So you're just reading, you just regurgitating.
It's plagiarism?
So maybe your addiction is actually to the reviews of movies.
That's interesting. Wow. We're now getting to a real deep and dark place.
I would say so.
Yeah. So what's the next question?
Moving
Luke
along.
Loves it here.
So, Luke, I guess you introduce yourself a little bit and what you do on campus, what you're involved in.
No, I didn't.
What you're... What?
You said I introduced myself.
We'll
I think you did, Simon.
We'll have you introduce yourself a little bit. I get confused, okay.
Well, my name is Luke Carroll. I am a first year. I live in Yay.
What is Yay?
Yay is a dorm. I consider myself very progressive, so I'm in a lot of the political groups, the Whig Caucus, College Democrats, Princeton Students for Reproductive Justice. Most recently, along with a number of amazing friends, I started a club called Progressive Law Society to bring that angle into a new discipline, specifically law.
Luke actually has an event later today.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Give a little plug?
Yeah. Well, we're inviting Tanya Hernandez. She's a Fordham law professor, and she's an expert on anti-discrimination law, especially as it relates to Latino anti-Black discrimination.
Everyone, today's sponsor, we want to thank them. We're excited to announce PIP, Princeton in Prison. Study abroad in a prison near you. You'll feel stuck, wear orange, and only get a single if you've got major issues. Princetonians will fit right in. Thank you to our sponsor.
Nice.
Luke, you are the fifth in a family of 9 kids.
Yes.
It's hard to remember sometimes?
Yeah.
Okay. Who's your favorite sibling?
Well, first let me describe it a little bit more. I have 3 step-siblings and 5 biological siblings.
Okay.
So that's 9 in total. You know, love them all equally.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Even the step-siblings?
Of course, yeah.
Oh.
I'll answer your question by telling you who I saw most recently, which is my oldest brother, Jared. He lives in Brooklyn, and he is studying music production right now, online classes with Berklee College of Music.
Wow. And listener, that's a technique we like to call answer the question you want to answer, not the one you're asked. And so, Luke,
we
both
have a real budding politician here.
Yeah, seriously.
Luke, both of your parents are lawyers. And so, yeah. Nine kids, your parents are working professionals.
Yeah.
Like, how did they have time for that? Were you raised by some other people by any chance? Like, how did that happen? Explain that to us.
Gosh, I don't know. They just both work hard, and I love both my parents so much. And I'm really fortunate that I get to spend a lot of time with them. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, not answering the question once again. Did you have a nanny?
Yeah. Okay. Definitely at times, yeah. Yeah, and you know, definitely close with the sitters too, you know, because you just get to know them.
That's nice. Mm-hmm. That's nice.
You have any anecdotes from?
Okay, like, you can talk.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's fine. You can talk.
I don't have any anecdotes like your grandma's anecdotes, Simon. As far as it relates to
Dodo
babysitters, yeah, Dodo. That's the end of my
Was it anything like, are you familiar with the TV show Jessie from Disney Channel?
Yeah.
Do you think that your experience as a child was anything similar to Jessie from Disney Channel?
From the Disney Channel.
That's a good question.
Oh, my apologies. From the Disney Channel.
I'm not in that socioeconomic class.
He's a bit higher.
Yeah. I'm actually lower. I don't live in like a fancy New York penthouse.
You live in Nantucket.
He lives in a fancy Nantucket house.
No, I actually don't live in Nantucket. I don't.
They just sold it.
They just my bad. They summer there.
my mistake. Sorry.
No. So I don't know. It's not comparable.
Mm. Would you say the golden child?
Yeah.
You are okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for being honest.
Yeah.
And
is
clear.
That something you think about every day, or is that something that just
I think about it every day insofar as I think of my mother and my father every day and, you know, how I want to do right by them. Mm. And that's really what motivates me.
Do they treat you differently because you're the golden child?
No, actually, they treat all of us exactly equally.
Does that bug you because you're better than your siblings?
No, I wouldn't say I'm better than them. I would just
say golden
smug
implies
smile on your face. If they're telling me otherwise, you're like, no.
I would say that all of my siblings are exceptionally intelligent, mm-hmm. athletic, generous, kind, social.
How does it feel to be none of those things?
Well, okay.
That is hard.
Yeah, that's a funny joke. and so I couldn't be happier.
Wow.
How many siblings do you guys have?
Oh, he's turning the tables on us.
Wiki, I have 8.
Wow.
Mm. Wow.
Really?
But, yeah, I have 8. I have 1 biological brother, shout out Ted, 3 half-sisters.
Ted.
And 4 step-siblings. But unlike you, not equally close to all of them.
Okay.
Yeah. That's why I asked.
Right.
So that's crazy. You're equally close to each of your 8. That's wild.
Well, how do you even measure that? I mean, are you equally close geographically, emotionally, by the amount of information that you know about someone?
I think it's a vibe. I think you know when you're close to someone.
Okay.
It's a connection.
I don't think it has anything to do with geographically.
Yeah, come on. No one
ever thought that ever.
Well, but those other things can come from physical closeness. You know, if I had a sibling who went to school here, we'll be closest with that sibling.
But thankfully, that's why FaceTime was invented.
Yes. Right. True. Shout out Apple.
Yeah, true. True. That.
So I'm curious about, so you're interested in politics. So
sorry?
I'm curious. Let me repeat that.
Da-da-da.
So you're interested in politics.
Yeah.
What exactly are you interested in that domain? What kind of change do you want to see in the world? And we're going to get into a little bit more on things about that.
Oh, my God. What a fantastic question. How do I not answer that in like a 10-hour diatribe? But
that's what everyone would want to do. So true.
Hey, that's why we're here for our 10-hour podcast.
I mean, oh my God, what am I interested in politics?
No, within politics, specific kind of change are you interested in?
Okay, well, you asked two questions, but I'll address the second one.
Be better, Simon.
what kind of change do I want? I want to see a strong middle class with a wage that grows year after year. I want to see near complete decarceration in a country that incarcerates more people per capita than any other place on earth. I want to see equal and limited policing replaced and aided by, in some cases, welfare, social work, other government programs. I want to see equal and high quality education that isn't segregated by race, de facto segregated. Mm.
But your answer here is implying that you are looking on a really macro scale.
Yeah.
So in politics, you want to affect as many people as possible.
Yeah, I don't know. Because that's a good philosophical question.
A mayor would not be interested in doing the same things. Well, they might be interested, but they just know that they don't have the capacity.
Yeah, that's a good philosophical question. You know, if you're someone who's going into politics for your convictions, which I would say that I am, mm-hmm. although people are allowed to doubt that, you know, is it because you think that you can maximize your effect on your effect on people? Is that why you're entering that field? Is it some other combination of things?
Well, if you
just liked public service just for the sake of public service, wouldn't you just sort of do whatever entry level, you know, service sector job, public mm-hmm. service job that you could find?
Yeah. Well, some say it's actually more noble to do it at the lower levels, even if you're not affecting as many people, because once you get into those positions of power, you're more likely to hurt people in different ways that you might not be expecting. Or when you accumulate a lot of wealth, then you're, you know, implicitly hurting people.
Right.
So I guess how do you weigh those, that cost-benefit analysis?
Good little vocab there, Simon. Cost-benefit
analysis.
I don't
even take economics. Look
Whoa.
At me.
Could have fooled me. Continue.
I would weigh it by, you know, taking a look at the past and say, who do you identify as the people who've, you know, lifted so many out of poverty or saved so many lives? You know, you're at the end of the day, you're limited to a certain list of people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that shouldn't ever discount the millions of other people who work in the service of others. But, you know, surely if you zoom out enough, you know, it's sort of a clear equation, right?
Now, let me ask you something. What do you think, like, in your background, how you grew up, like, made you come to these conclusions about, like, what's important? Like, why when we ask you this question, do you, like, list those certain changes you want to see the most? Like, mm-hmm. why are those important to you?
It's a good question. I probably can't answer it with any certainty, other than it's probably about the people who raised me,
mm-hmm.
namely my parents. You know, my mom, for example, represents incarcerated people in Massachusetts. It's about the people who educated me. You know, I had some amazing teachers who taught me about those subjects and the history.
Amazing hands who taught you about the importance of...
But, you know, I wouldn't credit myself with any of it, you know, mm-hmm. Rousseau, blank slate.
That's a philosopher.
Yeah, I think I got it, because I think he's talking about what they call tabula rasa.
I feel like is that how you pronounce that?
Tabula rasa.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you're talking about, like, affecting people on a macro scale, do you think, like, would the benefit for you or would the reward for you be seeing... like directly how it's impacting people's lives, like firsthand? Like you meet someone and they're like, this legislation really affected me. Or would it be kind of just the numbers and the statistics or the data of like, I just know that this has affected this many people or helped this many people?
I don't know. That's such a deep question. Yeah. Who knows what is going to bring me happiness in the future? I guess the answer is, you know, you can always, that's sort of the beauty of that area of work, is that you can go at it from any level, you know, mm-hmm. and find what suits you. And there will always be others. But you don't have an
inkling of what would be the most...
Yeah, I don't know.
To you, like,
that's a good question. It's a very good question. I'll take that away from this interview and
give it a think.
And give it a think.
Put it on that tabula rasa.
Give it a little noodle. Yeah. And do you like the idea of being famous?
Oh my God, who doesn't, right?
A lot of people probably. A lot of
people don't.
Okay, right. Yeah. Right.
And so what do you like most what do you like most about that?
I would not say that I'm like particularly interested in being famous, you know?
Well, I think you just said previous you did. Answer yeah, tells me otherwise. The opposite, who wouldn't?
No, I mean, I'm not actually. And there are much more direct ways to become famous than to try to like climb the rungs of government or do noble.
OnlyFans.
Like a sex tape, yeah.
Right, exactly. So clearly there needs to be some sort of transaction. There's some output that I'm giving to the world.
You're selling your soul to the devil. That's the transaction.
True.
Right.
As someone interested in politics, do you think it's more important to be well-liked or well-known?
Well, you know what? I think, you know, 30 years ago, somebody sitting in my place would have said it's more important to be well-liked.
We actually interviewed them 30 years ago.
Yeah, that's true.
Because that's where you got your notability. I mean, literally, if you think about the function of political parties before there were more than three TV channels, it depended on local political chapters, local party chapters endorsing national candidates. And so if you didn't actually have like an appeal in terms of your personality and your platform, you know, people would very easily turn against you, and it didn't really matter your rank. You know, nowadays it's like, oh, if you're the head of the party, if you're one of the top three or four most notable people, well then you can, you know, you're just notable, so you'll win. You're not necessarily likable, but you're notable.
But you have to be well liked by your constituents to get elected.
Honestly, that's debatable. I mean, you can't be disliked actively, but sometimes I think people just go to the default using their party label as a heuristic and say, well, what's the most notable person under this party label that I adhere to, and go with that. Because the party label is what matters, not the individual anymore.
So other than George Santos, who do you admire?
Well, a separate note on George Santos. I just think it's wrong how people are criticizing him for being a drag queen. sure, he shouldn't necessarily conceal that.
I think you're misreading that. People love that he was a drag queen.
Okay, well, in what I've seen, you know, it's like critical, and I'm like, hey, you know, that's not the right. That's not the environment that we want to create. Right. You know?
It's a safe space.
We
want to see him in drag in Congress.
Well,
because that's how legislation's going to get passed, though.
We want those people who, you know, have had a history of persecution to feel comfortable in the modern era.
And thankfully, Luke Carroll is going to make that happen.
Luke's going to make it happen.
I don't know. I can't, but, you know.
You can't.
So Luke,
I can't alone.
Luke, so the I guess the takeaway is that he loves George Santos and...
No.
Actually wants to see him as a drag queen.
All right, let's end the pod. Let's end it right there.
Yep.
All right, bye, guys. Luke, I have a question for you, okay?
Yeah.
So we're, let's see, you're how old, 18, 19?
19.
We're 50 years down the road.
Okay, that's a lot.
All right, you're age 69. Nice.
Finally gets elected.
So you've had a career of holding political office, enacting change, what have you. What is the most important thing that you want to be known for?
You know what? I think that when it comes to, especially when it comes to politics and public service and government, you know, you are a subject of history, not the other way around, you know. So it's going to be whatever comes to us at that time, you know, whatever challenge, whatever great issue or movement, you know, and how we handle that, that's how we'll be evaluated 50 years down the line. But we don't necessarily get to choose what that is.
Long answer short, I don't know.
I don't know.
It depends.
Okay, we should talk about more like conspiracy theory stuff.
No, or, yeah. So what conspiracy theories do you believe in?
Or Joe Rogan stuff, you know? I'm very interested in UFOs. I don't believe that they are aliens at all, nor do I believe any of the other sort of zany conspiracy theories. But the fact that we just can't track these things is crazy. We have such unbelievable technology, you know, like super fast fighter jets and radars and satellites, and we just have no idea what these little objects are. It's sort of disconcerting, you know?
Well, we have like incredible technology for Earth, but like a UFO from some other place, like their technology is completely different. So we don't even have the technology to like even know or interpret what that technology is, if it exists. I actually do sound like Joe Rogan right now.
I actually took a class on this. Oh. This course is out to get you. Is my running seminar on conspiracy theories.
Oh, you've had two classes?
No.
I think she took it last semester.
Oh, my bad. Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry, listener.
It's okay.
Listener, I'm confused. and we did like one of our essays was about UFOs, and one of the things on one of the articles I was reading was like it would be the equivalent of giving like Leonardo da Vinci a garage door opener and telling him to try and figure it out. Like he would just have no idea. Mm. So,
I mean, that gets to something deeper, which is I would say it's unethical for us to try to contact life outside of our Earth. You know, right now we send radio signals and occasionally a satellite. We just, you know, eject it into space with like a golden disk of information about humanity, hoping it'll land on somebody. But I think that's actually unethical because, you know, imagine a scenario where our signals were intercepted or, you know, we were found out. Well, it's going to be almost certainly by some sort of alien species that's way more advanced than us. And, you know, that would make us subject to their whims. And that's why it's called the dark forest paradox, is that, you know, yes, you know, these other civilizations are out there, but they're purposefully, ethically, you know, wisely deciding to hide themselves, because if they were found out, it would be by somebody more complex or advanced than they are. And that would spell their doom, most likely.
So to clarify, you don't believe that UFOs are evidence of alien life, but you do believe in aliens?
I don't know if I believe in them, although I believe in the statistical certainty that there's life somewhere else in the universe other than this tiny little
But you wouldn't call that life aliens?
I would.
Okay, so you do believe in aliens.
I believe, in the statistical certainty of aliens there, yeah.
He believes in aliens, listener.
There we go. Shall we move on to our second segment?
Listener, and now it's time for a very important segment of ours. It's called our Socratic Dialogue. It's where we really unpack the serious questions.
Okay, because I'm gonna bounce them back at you, you know. This is gonna be a back.
No, you're not. Sure you will.
This is a tennis match, you know.
So, Emily,
or a squash.
Yeah.
Or a squash,
you want to throw him the first question?
Sure. If you could have dinner with any historical figure, who would it be, and why is it Robert E. Lee?
It's not Robert E. Lee. I really don't like him.
That's what you told us right before the podcast.
That's not true.
Don't lie.
He said that right before.
He's actually wearing a Confederate flag shirt right now.
No, that's not true.
Why are you wearing a mask of Robert E. Lee? That's weird.
That's kind of contradictory. Yeah.
Anyway. I'm actually interested in You know, the classic question is, what president would you have dinner with and why? And I actually am going to answer that question. I would get...
He's just interviewing himself at this point.
We
don't need to be here.
Hold on. I would get dinner with President Hillary Clinton.
Oh. President? Oh, because... Okay.
Now, why did I just say that? I know.
Why did you say that, Luke?
You guys all look really surprised. And the reason is, we have had you know, hundreds of books, documentaries, news articles, you know, in-depth analyses of why Hillary Clinton lost the 2016 presidential election, and we were thrown into 4 years of chaos.
You got this. And, take your time.
Well, I was, because Simon was like doing something weird.
That's just Simon.
Simon picked up his phone. That's not that weird, Luke.
Here's the thing. She won the popular vote by 3.5 million votes, more than any candidate before her in American history. And yet we still deride her as it wasn't that Trump won. It was that Hillary lost. She didn't do enough in Ohio. She didn't do enough in Michigan. You know, she wasn't likable enough. The tone of her voice was too cold. She should have had a different running mate. Maybe she should have been the VP and it should have been a man who was running for president, you know? And people just ignore the fact that she won by this unbelievable margin, the popular vote. And in every other democracy in the world, they adhere to what the populace wants.
But she still wasn't president, though.
She wasn't president, but she was the president.
In your eyes, she was.
She was the president that was not.
But I think she's going to be a little weirded out if you call her President Hillary Clinton, don't you think?
Well, is that like a form of flirting? Are you trying to flirt with her? I think she's married.
So. Well, she's also one of the most skilled, you know, diplomats and politicians of our time. You know, and people
she probably doesn't get nervous.
Your dinner would be about that. You would be apologizing, and then you would be saying, so how do you do it?
I'm just telling you what my dinner would not be about. It would not be about why or how did you lose, because she won. That's the tea.
But you're not learning anything from the dinner.
I'm sure I would learn a lot from her experience.
If you had to say one pickup line to Hillary Clinton, what would it be? Go ahead.
I'm gonna blow you away.
Oh, like don't! That was a good word.
Whoa!
Okay, keep on finishing the sentence.
I lost my train of thought.
I'm gonna blow
you away.
You away.
Yeah, that's
with
it.
What? You're just, oh.
Just period? That sentence ends there?
I'm going to blow you away.
And then you just leave.
That's a, no wonder. Wow.
Yeah, that's it.
Wow.
That was good. All right. I have another question for you.
Yeah.
Which do you care about less? The gender wage gap or climate change?
He's laughing because he really doesn't care about them at all.
Yeah, neither one. This is a hard question for him.
Well, actually, here's something that I've been thinking about a lot.
Hey, let's go back to the question, please.
I'm not going to answer that.
Okay. So you don't care about women or future generations, huh?
No, now you're just lying. I care about both deeply.
Okay.
Here's something that never gets talked about. You know, I'm sure all of you are familiar with the fact that we have a housing shortage in every major city, but literally everywhere, you know, in the United States. Mm-hmm. That's going to affect all of us. That's going to affect every Princeton grad. That's going to affect our families. And cities are responding to saying, okay, we're going to build more houses, you know, not just social housing.
Not affordable housing.
Right. But also we're just going to encourage developers to build more. And sometimes, yes, that's luxury housing too. And in my opinion, most cities and states have given leeway for way too much of that. Now, something that's not in the conversation at all is multi-generational housing. You know, we are talking about this in terms of one-bedroom apartments for the most part, for a single couple sometimes that can accommodate one child. What about families, most of the time immigrant families, let alone low-income families, that rely on three generations to support themselves in terms of the combined income, who, you know, what about them?
Would you say your family is being impacted by this after you just sold the house in Nantucket?
I know. So we never had a house in Nantucket.
How many houses do you have?
And
he's going to skip over that
one. He's going to answer a different question.
And my answer is no. Fortunately, my family's not impacted by the housing shortage.
That's good. Yeah, I'm happy for you.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for...
I just had one question.
Okay.
This is actually, let's get serious, though, because they've been trying to make joke questions at you.
Okay.
Yeah,
this has been pretty grueling. I mean, I love it, but...
Yeah. Something stinks, right? Are you sure you wiped last time? Yeah, I'm hoping you say. I'm hoping you say yes. I don't think it's like the heart of a question. No,
he's thinking. I mean,
yeah. He can't remember.
I mean, I don't know why you guys are laughing because the stench is pretty unbearable.
Yeah, no, it's been really bad.
It's actually pretty remarkable the number of times people come up to me and they tell me how good I smell.
Oh, okay.
It happens.
Opposite happens to me.
I was one of those.
I get escorted out of rooms. I told you how good you smell.
Right, didn't you do that?
I did.
I have to spray Simon down before he enters my dorm.
Yeah. Wait, and so, Luke, how do you keep that ass so clean, though?
You know,
well, he was the president of Charmin Ultrasoft.
He
wasn't the president of Charmin Ultrasoft.
He wanted to be.
What you said? Back to Luke. Let's not interrupt our guests. Sorry. Is it a bidet? Is it dude wipes? Or is it just old fashioned toilet paper?
Oh my God! I'm so glad you brought up dude wipes.
I love dude wipes.
Because how obnoxious! Oh. Like how obnoxious!
I take it back.
How utterly obnoxious that we need to have gendered.
Oh,
wipes.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean,
come on. Just call them wipes.
And okay, somebody like a utilitarian is gonna respond to me by saying.
So you just use the word utilitarian when referring to dude wipes.
Is gonna respond to me. Hold on, you want to listen to this?
Sorry.
Is gonna respond to me by saying, okay, well, there's a market for it, so it's fine. Just put it out there. You know, you might say this shouldn't be gendered, but if there's a market for it, there's a market for it. And that's not necessarily true. I mean, you're sort of creating the market by enforcing these rituals and these presuppositions about masculinity, in this case with dude wipes.
Well, actually, I feel really cool when I'm wiping with a dude wipe.
Do you use dude wipes?
Are you telling me my experience is invalid?
You're saying not everybody can be called a dude? Why not?
Because some people may not prefer to have that term used.
To answer your question before Simon so rudely interrupted me, yes, I am a user of dude wipes.
Okay.
And I feel awesome when I'm using them.
Yeah.
But is that experience invalid to you?
I wouldn't, valid or invalid are not the words that I would use. I'm more criticizing the company, not its consumers. If anything, it's consumers or victims.
I see.
Oh, I'm a
victim. You're a victim. So when
I'm a dude wipe survivor.
Every time you wipe your ass. They're raking in the dough.
To be honest, I do prefer a bidet, but you know, don't have those at Princeton.
No.
Do you have one at home?
I do. I do.
No, I've always wanted to try
it's
one.
It's fantastic.
Fantastic.
Talk about avoiding chafing.
I watch reaction videos and people are always like, you know.
Yeah. You watch reaction videos faces the first time they use bidet. That's oddly specific.
Yes.
Sophia, do you have bidets in all of your houses?
All my houses?
Yeah.
I have a bidet in my room, but before you make
it's
your
a family bidet, right?
Before you make jokes at me, it's because of a medical condition I have.
Okay.
And so that actually hurt my
called
feelings.
Hemorrhoids.
IBS.
Really?
It would be IBS.
Oh, wait, really? You have to have a bidet.
It's
for
because
IBS.
Like
you don't have to, but like
imagine how many dude wipes she would go through.
I'm not trying to hurt the environment and also not trying to chafe.
Oh,
not
just
trying
get,
to chafe all day.
Really, it just gets all really like marshy down there.
Marshy
is the word I would use.
It's like a mangrove swamp.
That's true.
Have you ever used a bidet, Luke?
No.
Are you against it for a particular reason or just haven't had the opportunity?
He has his nanny's wipe his ass for him.
Not even remotely appropriate.
Jesse does it for him.
That's not even okay at all.
But would you use a bidet if given the chance? Or do you feel like, as a man of the people, probably should just stick to toilet paper? What do you think?
You know, I'm pretty neutral. I haven't actually given it much thought. I think I would probably, you know, do whatever happens to me in that moment, you know?
Whatever happens to you. So, like, if a bidet sprays water at your ass, you would take it. You'd be fine.
Well, the bidet would, you know, be done unto me.
But you would have to, like, press a button.
You
would
like
have to turn it on. It would be your choice.
Yeah, right.
Your body, your choice.
I think Luke is what I already say.
Your body, your choice. Yeah.
Thank you.
He's very open.
I think Luke just always lives in the moment. So us asking him
all
these hypotheticals, like the answer you're always going to get is, well, it depends. I don't know. I'm not there right now.
I need to think about it.
I need to think about that.
What do you think about using, like, putting bidets in prisons?
I, you know what I would do first?
Uh-oh, here it comes.
I would tear down the prison.
Oh.
And then I'd say,
what prison, Simon?
Huh?
I understood the joke. Thank don't you. Worry. And listener, say, Simon still doesn't get it.
And then I'd say, you know, you can seek out a bidet on your own as a free person.
Oh, so you're not even going to give it to the ex-prisoners.
To the formerly incarcerated people, you mean?
Ex-prisoners, yes.
I think there's a new terminology. It's like they're like reintroduced to society. It's not even formerly incarcerated people anymore. I read an article.
How about just people? People? Yeah. Right.
How about just human beings?
Chew on that.
You guys are so, oh my God, so woke. I can.
Well, this is nice.
Luke, anything you want to plug? I know you have your progressive...
I'm just excited to see what comes of this podcast. You know, you're in the baby stages, and yet it's really entertaining and really fun to talk. And the dynamic between you three, there's some magic going on.
You said there's chemistry there?
Now listen,
oh,
am I the perfect guest? I don't think so. You know, I think I answered you. Well,
Luke,
but I answered you literally.
Luke, have some self-esteem. You are perfect.
Yeah, but nonetheless, but I'm just so excited to see where this takes you and who ends up in this seat.
Thank you.
Well, we're actually having, and this will get you excited, we're having Hillary Clinton on podcast.
You know what? You guys could interview some, you can get people to come to Princeton just by saying come to Princeton, you know? You could get anybody on this podcast.
How do you feel about the fact that our institution is so elitist?
I disapprove of that type of attitude.
I'm sorry. I'm gonna go. Oh God.
I disapprove of that kind of attitude.
He said that in the mirror this morning.
Yeah.
Yep.
What does everybody do the first thing when they wake up? What do you guys all do? Simon, what do you do?
What do I do?
Check your
phone.
I just
moan for about 5 minutes.
Moan.
And then I like, okay, I think I can get up.
Yeah.
And then I hop in the shower. I brush my teeth. I have great oral hygiene.
Mm-hmm.
What else do I do? Listen to some music.
Yeah. Mm. I wasn't looking for a sequence. I was just wondering what the
I'm bored already.
It was like one question. Like,
yeah. Sophia, what's that? And then Emily.
So one of my New Year's resolutions is stop pressing the snooze button. So I hop out, pop a pod in the Keurig. You're probably against those pods because they're environmentally unfriendly, and I'm sorry in advance. And then I drink it while reading the New York Times morning newsletter, actually.
Wow. Nice.
Thank you.
That sounds pretty awesome.
Thanks.
I wake up like this.
And then listener, Emily described she has her hands crossed over her chest.
Dracula.
And
it's more like a sit-up, I guess, position.
There you go. Yeah.
So I do my morning daily sit-up. There's my workout. And then I talk to my roommate while getting ready, complain to her about how I don't want to take a 9 a.m.
Yeah.
And I still signed up for it anyway. Yeah. And then off to class.
Nice.
And Emily's bod is popping. You can tell that one push, that one sit-up
I have
is,
abs.
It's a workout hack. You just do it every morning.
Just do just one sit-up every morning.
All right, audience. I want to...
But Luke, he asked that question for a reason. What is your first thing you do in the morning?
No, I was just curious. I think that tells you a lot about a person, you know.
It does.
What does it say about us?
What's the first thing you do when you get out of bed?
I get changed to go to the gym.
Good for you. Luke, it was an absolute pleasure having you on today.
I love you guys. I really
do. I love you.
You know what? Thank you. That was going to go into our final segment, which we just say I love you to each other.
All right, let's go.
Love you.
I love you guys so much.
Thank you.
I love you. All right. I love you guys.
Thank you.
That was the Bechdel test. Thank you so much. Have a good one.
Bye.
Bye.
We're not harmonizing this time.
No.